You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
You know, it starts with, please can I have a selfie, which is wonderful. Because when that stops happening, you need to be concerned. And then as the selfie is happening, they go, oh my God, my granny's going to be over the moon. Or my mother. I'm everybody's mother's favorite. I'm everybody's grandmother's favorite. So I'm okay with it. I'll cash in on that. But that's pretty much where it is. And then Dan Nichols.
Hooray!
My guest on the Dan Nichols Show this week is somebody I have admired greatly for many years. He's a national treasure on the comedy front, and he looks exactly today like he did the very, very first time I met him. And Mark Lottering, you probably won't remember this, but you gave me one of my seriously cool moments early on in my career when I was at a nightclub called Hemisphere, and I was with some mates, and I think I'd met you once, and I was telling my mates, oh, that's my friend Mark Lottering, you know, we hang out from time to time, pretty cool guy. And then I walked past hurriedly, knowing full well you wouldn't have a clue who I was, and you stopped me and said, hey, Dan Nichols, how you doing?
Yes.
And my mates just thought I was the coolest guy ever. Now, you probably had to ask somebody else what my name was, but it still held, and I'll always remember that very fondly.
Yeah, I met you at some bash before that.
Yeah.
And I don't think you expected me to remember you from that night. But I'm quite impressed that you remember anything that happened at a club called Hemisphere.
That was that place where you knew you'd had too much to drink when the building stopped swaying. So it was 33 floors up in a Cape Town breeze. And when you stopped feeling that sense of imbalance, it was time to go home.
Yeah, the only thing I really always remember about Hemisphere is the hand of the bouncer gently on my back. just going this way, please.
It's time, yeah, Mr. Lottering.
Yeah, it's time, Mr. Lottering. Always.
And that was sort of 4:30 in the afternoon.
Yes, Wednesday.
It's lovely to have you on the show and welcome.
Thank you.
And it's lovely to be able to celebrate this remarkable story of yours. Now, saying, Jess, that you don't look any different, you certainly don't. But you've also had this career where it always feels like Mark Lottering has just been part of the cultural furniture in South Africa. Because as long as I've been here from university, Mark Lottering has been making people laugh.
I'm getting that more and more. This nonsense started just over a year ago, up until yesterday, every third person, you know, it starts with, please can I have a selfie, which is wonderful, because when that stops happening, you need to be concerned. And then as the selfie is happening, they go, oh my God, my granny's going to be over the moon. Or my mother. I'm everybody's mother's favorite. I'm everybody's grandmother's favorite. So I'm okay with it. I'll cash in on that. But that's pretty much where it is. And then Dan Nichols.
Well, in fairness, yes, everybody's mum and grandmother, and in some cases, great-grandparent loves you. But a lot of their kids love you, and a lot of their kids' kids love you. And you've got this brand. It's a terrible word to use, but you've got this brand that
is the word.
It's multi-generational. You speak to so many different people. That's a really cool talent to have.
Yeah, it's an interesting time in that the original fans, let's call them that, are now bringing their kids in to watch the shows with them. But I say kids, but I'm talking about young human beings who are now
35
who are now between 18 and 26 or so. Why am I that specific? But bringing them into the audience. So that's pretty much, you know, where it is at now. And then I've got to kind of take a step back and go, yo, because you want to keep acting young for a really long time, and you want to be cool for a long time, but you know, people have this thing about age is nothing but a number, and I'm 56 now, and they go, no, just be yourself. But I swear, there does come a time when you do open up your wardrobe, dare I say closet, and look and go, I should be giving this T-shirt to my nephew. You know, I really should not be, you know, because I often have to look at Anma before I leave and I go, is the jeans rolled up a little bit too high? Are things looking desperate? So I'm kind of there in my life. But yeah, I guess you still always just want to be cool. But I am so conscious of the fact that it's been a long time. I keep saying 25 years just as a safe number, but my close friends keep whispering in my ear, it's been a bit longer than 25.
Which there is that, okay, I'm getting a little bit older, sure. But there's also, well, roll back and think, well, when I kicked all of this off, this would have been the dream, I'd imagine, that one day I'll be able to look back on this sort of career.
That's interesting because it never was the dream. I thought that we were going to have rock and roll fun for 7 months. The person I called my manager at the time was just someone who I generally used to party with. And then two of my best friends became my crew. So we kind of got onto a bus and went to Joburg. And we were astounded and laughing hysterically backstage because we heard after the show, because we were like, my bro, this means is laughing, except, you know, and they're taking you seriously and you've got to go through something called CompuTicket to see me, which just blew our minds. So we thought, this is going to be amazing. We're going to get a lot of money for food and clothing and we're just going to have a great time. And then someone called me from, I was in Joburg, and someone, the Joburg Theatre had a little theatre on the side. I think they still have it, and we were doing stuff there. And someone said, Chiki, I was at the braai, and they said your name and your surname. Now, you know when you're in Cape Town and someone says your name and your surname at the braai, there's a chance.
You've made it.
There's a chance that you've made it. They're talking about you at the braai. And then people started writing, and it's weird to see what people say about you when you certainly haven't looked at yourself as being a comedian, because at that point I was working as an usher at the Baxter Theatre, so I saw real comedians. So when they start calling you a comedian and they use words like satire and they use words like a fresh perspective from the brown world and sent to us from the Cape Flats with love, and you're reading about what people have to say about you, and these people who are writing about you have degrees. So they are not saying that you're just telling jokes. And that will always be fascinating to me. Well, to you know, I learned a long time ago not to read reviews. So for about 15 years, I've not read anything that's being said about me.
Not a single one.
Not a single one.
Thank God.
Not a single one. Occasionally.
Because I didn't mean it.
Occasionally.
I've had a lot to drink.
When people say amazing things, and the publicist always says, oh, by the way, I'm taking this from that newspaper and this from that journalist because that journalist is respected. I mean, just putting it in the press release. But to see where, you know, and then 1 year rolled on to the next and people keep writing about you and saying what you're doing. And then you go, I might never have to go back to looking for a full-time gig, you know, because I've done various things. I worked in advertising. I've done a lot of things in my life. Worked in a call center, used to collect money if you owed Fashini money. That was my voice on the phone.
That might have been the first time we met in that case.
I think so. More and more, the more you speak, it's sounding your beautiful tones are very familiar to me. And then 1 year just rolls into the next. So when you say, was that the dream? I now remember as a kid, maybe everybody did that, or maybe just gay kids, but you pretend that you're famous, you know, and you pretend that you're giving interviews. And that's what we were doing, sitting on the pavement in Retreat on the Cape Flats. And when you think you're famous, you immediately adopt an American accent because only American people are really famous.
As anybody who's ever listened to Good Hope FM will know.
Absolutely. Yo, yo, yo. So I grew up with that. So I think that then eventually as the years go by and you tie things up and you go, okay, wow. I'm very comfortable with what I'm doing. I think that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Well, now as I speak to you, I know that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. You have to say that as the Sasa card draws closer, because you don't want to sound like a loser. But you know, if there's such a thing as a calling, I feel that that's the path that I am on. I'm still excited to write a lot of stuff. I just feel a lot of pressure now because there's so much that I now want to do. And I really think for myself, from my own perspective, I only really got comfortable with what I'm doing, I think, for the last 5 years.
which is tied into a big degree with the additional elements of this career of Mark Lottering, where you've basically become the Andrew Lloyd Webber of South Africa.
You could have gone for any other example, my friend. You could have Googled a lot. You could have Googled some cool people. the visual is there now. That's how you see me. Andrew Lloyd Webber.
You become the king of the South African musical. I'm
starting to sit like Andrew. I might be...
But you've created in this character and in these shows around it, this musical space. And I think it took quite a lot of people by surprise because some of us had heard you sing, but it was normally in a nightclub at 3 a.m. when you're this incredibly funny man. Still singing at 4 yes. in the morning. And then out came Auntie Merle
Feel
and this
for the Uber.
Musical
for
space.
Uber drivers. Yes, carry on.
being serenaded on the way home. Mark has one star. He would not stop. when you started conceptualizing this, how much of a brave step, how much courage did it take going, okay, I've established Mark Lottering. Everyone knows who Mark Lottering is. I'm going to do something that's actually really different. Was it a big, a challenging one for you?
It's only different to people who haven't, to the people who've been hanging with me since day one from the church days. They're not that surprised. Because when you grow up in the church on the Cape Flats, everybody is Whitney Houston. The people who we pray for is Bobby Brown. But everybody's Whitney Houston. Everybody can sing. Whether you can sing or not, you believe it because the spirit takes over. So you just grow up with music around you and you grow up being very comfortable with singing. And when I realized that I was not a singer early on, because I started hanging out with singers in the business. And then you realize that you're a storyteller and you're a funny storyteller. So the singing aspect, the people who were, lighties growing up with me always knew that was there, the business of writing music. There was a piano in our house when you're in the church. I was fortunate enough to be hanging with the cool people who also believed in writing their own music. So that was there. But I think it got, not buried, but it got pushed to the side because I enjoy telling stories. I love telling stories. I love creating. And then, you get to a point, as one does in your career, where you go, I need to, I'm a little bit bored. Hey, here we are, Dan. How's your podcast going? I'm a little bit bored. And I want to do some more stuff. And I thought, because my characters as well, I still get very concerned because I find a lot of people, they're happy to see the happy colored. You've got to be the happy colored. And when you're a comedian, it's even easier. Just let's make some jokes, Mark. Why don't you put a duke on that character? Come on, let's see. And they call Auntie, some people call Auntie Merle a tea lady, which if you listen to her, she's absolutely not. She's so full of prejudice and she believes she lives in a freestanding house and she's holier than thou and better than them and So there are layers there. But they love the character and they love the characters. And then I thought, let me bring all the other characters to life that Auntie Merle refers to. She talks about her daughter and she's very happy because her daughter's marrying a white dude from Bantry Bay. So the two are going to meet. So why don't we bring to life the daughter? People have heard about her for years. Her husband, the neighbor, the white dude, which is great because if you bring white people into a show, you're cashing in big time because suddenly everybody wants to see what's going on. And, white people book in advance because they're really well organized. So it's a win-win. And when I brought these characters to life, I found that all South Africans – we have a lot of truth. We're able to tell a lot under the banner of comedy, of course, and be outrageous, but bring in the truths there. But people really, really love the idea of the musicals because it brings all South Africans together under one roof for a night. And unlike what South African Twitter will have us believe, there are actually many South Africans who have a yearning to get on with each other. There are many South Africans who have a yearning to work together to move the country forward, but you won't know it if you're on Twitter. And so this, you know, the musical allows everybody to be a bit more comfortable. They're hearing amazing songs written by me. And with people with amazing voices, and we're telling great stories. And fundamentally, I'm a comedian. You know, any issue that you get me to talk about, much like you, Dan, because I've spent many nights out in a bar, on a bar with you, you end up, it's our way of coping with stuff, but you end up laughing outrageously about what essentially is a very serious issue. So I'm happy that I'm put together that way, because I'm able to do that in the music. So the comedian still strongly comes through. And now I want to move on to television. I want to move on to, because when I turn on my TV and I see, you know, there are people out there, local people doing amazing things on TV, but I go, but I'm so much better than you. And then you think,
my show has stopped. You do realize this.
I do. But I want to, you know, I want to take the musical stuff, and I want to take the shows and write plays, you know, and do some drama stuff. So when I said to you earlier, only 5 years back did I understand what I was doing, and I understood more about me, which is why I now feel, okay, you know, we don't want to run out of time, because there's a lot to do, because I've got a better sense of who I am now. And that's okay. I think it takes a while for a lot of us to find ourselves and see ourselves and get a better sense of ourselves. And so I'm kind of there now. But this is the liquor thing about stand-up comedy in particular, and it will never stop for me. And I can guarantee you it's going to happen this year again. Is you start a new show and you're great, or you feel that you're great because the response is really warm. And then you're performing, and I always do like a month or a month and a half. And by the time you get to the next Wednesday night, 10 nights in, you go, I wish Dan was here tonight, because he was here on opening night. And I think I was really crap, because now I look back and I go, now this gag is working. And I take that vibe of stand-up comedy with me through my life, because if people can understand, you never arrive. You know, I think there's a problem when you sit down and you go, I got this. Yeah. I've arrived. It's a wonderful thing not to arrive, because it's quite exciting.
Pushing yourself. You
it's
keep
quite
thinking,
exciting. Yeah.
There's more I can do. There's more I can give.
Yeah.
More
I can
be
so much better than this. They think this is funny, but you know, this story can be so much better. And I think that vibe I'm taking with me, you know, I pretty much live in that way.
Look, I think as your peers in the entertainment industry, we all feel that you've certainly got a long way to go, and there is vast scope for improvement. So I'm glad you do realize and appreciate and acknowledge that.
I honestly expected to come here and find you sober. But hey, why hope for a miracle?
First time for everything. How often do people from your background, from your family group, from the people you grew up with, come to you after they've seen an Auntie Marley, go, hey, I'm in the show, because they've identified themselves, think, oh, that must be Mark who's portraying me as character X.
The people who are in my stand-up and in my musicals, and there are many family members, they never see themselves. I think it's just a human trait that you watch a show and you keep pointing and you keep going, that's him, that's her. But the people who are the people very seldom go and go, oh, I'm Auntie Mole. So I think the closer you are to a thing, you know, you don't see yourself. But there have been times where I've had some cousins who kind of just looked at me weirdly and said, you know what, Mark, money's going to fix everything. We're not going to cause a thing, but a fancy lunch or a little EFT – and I will not be annoyed with you anymore for actually not even hinting that it's me, but for mentioning my name and saying, now, Auntie Des, who's always divorced and ruining other marriages. So, yeah.
So this leads in a rather roundabout way to a request, the actual reason I've invited you onto the podcast in its entirety. I have an absolute delight in doing stuff that's incredibly fun and very silly. Probably the highlight of that, and I'm sure you watch this repeatedly, I played the role of the conductor in the music video of Kurt Darren's Sturmtrain. It was 6 seconds of pure cinema magic when it came out. I reckon, and I draw back to my time playing Bugsy and Bugsy Malone at primary school and a horrific number of years ago. I think there could be a role for me.
I draw back to my time playing Bugsy.
The small rural town of Marandera was alight with news of my performance. I reckon the next Auntie Mel musical, I think you're on like volume 12 at the moment, a small walk-on part. I think this could complete my set of theatrical engagements.
Dan, you have been discussed at length in strategy sessions about bringing you on into the next musical. And where there's been much debate around the table is your fee after Sturm Train.
Has skyrocketed.
Nobody.
I'm unobtainable.
Nobody can afford you after that. And people don't want to get into legal issues with Kurt Darden as well, because apparently he treats you as though you are his own.
Now. Well, it's him and Taylor Swift. There's, in fact, you'll see Kurt and Taylor don't talk.
Because of you. So let's see if you're prepared to drop that rate. I mean, who knows what can happen.
We will negotiate. I'll tell you what I'll take for it. I'll forsake my rate. I will take a couple of tickets to the next show you've got coming, which is not Auntie Merle. And this is one that I think is almost going to be a little similar to the conversation we're having today, because it's got a real sense, just looking at the title, being a very autobiographical and reflective piece that's coming up.
Yeah, I've been on for a long time about...
Very long time.
about where, you know, where we come from. And you just don't... I like to say that you don't find time. You say, you know, I really want to do this ancestry thing and talk more about the family. But I think there's either you don't have the time or you don't really want to know, actually. So, and we come from... you know, family members who they talk and talk about the history of the family, and then you go, but who was that other guy crying and sobbing at Uncle Andrew's funeral? And I go, what guy? And you go, that very dark chap. Who's bring in some more egg mayo savories. And there's certain people just won't talk about. And then more and more also it's become, you know, the word colored has popped up again, thanks to Tyler and the Americans coming onto TikTok and saying only in South Africa are people using the word colored and how could you, and it's outrageous. And books have been written, and I read this book by Tessa, and the issue with the colored issue has come up again, and it's very interesting because the debate in South Africa now still is where, and especially now that we've just come through an election, is where do colored people stand, and people get quite hectic about it, like. Can colored people be trusted? Because
in this case, that's always been a question.
Some brown people want to be white, some brown people want to be black, and it's all about when it suits them. So it's a fiery issue, and even in my family, people have been quite cagey about, you know. And I talk about the issue in the show. About my mother always just telling us, you know, brushing it off and saying, no, it's fine, we're German Caribbeans. And you never know what the meaning of that actually was. And there's a story that my mother used to love telling at family gatherings. And she would go, you know, Mark was such a fair baby. When I used to walk around with him, this is how beautiful he was. People would come up to me and say, oh, but your madam has a beautiful child. And she would tell the story with great pride. And you sit back in later years and you go, that is quite a hectic story on so many levels. Mom, will you please stop telling it with a bigger smile on your face? So,
I mean, my mum used to tell people I was adopted, so it's slightly different, but I think the same point of departure.
You know, still, you know, people tell
stories. He's not really mine.
You know, and stories that later on in life you think, I should really be in therapy. And my mother would go, oh, but when, you know, when Mark was born, he nearly murdered me. You know, his head was so big, I thought I was going to die. And then everybody looks at this little kid in the lounge and looks at your head, which was big at the time. Wonder why your nickname is Copper to this day. So, you know, so I think in this, you know, in this show, I just want to talk a bit more about, yes, of course, it has to be funny. That's what people pay for. But I want to talk more about what my ancestry results were all about. And then also growing up on the Cape Flats and the issue of straight and the issue of gay and how you conform. And it might surprise you to know that I've been in a couple of straight relationships, Dan Nickel. So yeah, I think she was surprised as well. So there's a lot that I haven't spoken about in previous shows because you go, it's got to be funny. But I think I'm now at a place in my life where I'm able to take the really serious issues that I've avoided and still do them as a stand-up comedian, because you do realize as you move on in life that it's not just about you. Surprise, surprise, a lot of people have the same stories to tell and go through what you went through. So I think I'm comfortable enough to go to areas that I've not touched on before.
Now, it circles back to what you said earlier about us using laughter to deal with, especially in this country, the things that are difficult. And I think that's a unique beauty of some, not all, but some South African comedians, and you're definitely one of them, where you can take these things that we wrestle with and grapple with and fight about and both make us what we are but also pull us apart, and use comedy as a tool of dissecting them and almost approaching them in a comfortable space and coming away with a laugh, but also going, well, actually, I wasn't expecting that, but Mark Lottering made me think tonight. And I think that's a wonderful thing to be able to do with comedy.
It is, and I mean, people have questioned whether it's the responsibility of the comedian just to make people laugh or to 2 days later think about stuff. And I don't know, you know, I've been the comedian very much about making you feel good on the night. You know, I've always just thought, look, if I'm going to stand up there for 90 minutes, I generally piss venues off by not having an interval. Because I just feel that, but once I take off, if I'm alone on stage, I cannot imagine going into a dressing room and sitting there for 20 minutes with a cup of tea.
Three bottles of Chardonnay.
Okay. I was going to go there then. So, and then coming back after that and having to start again. So I like doing the 90-minute thing. But for those 90 minutes, I do want to make you feel, because now I actually believe people, because before people just used to say money's tight, but now money's really tight. I'm finding that more and more, especially now that I'm now in a situation where all my friends have kids and I sit and I listen to the school fees and the extramurals. I've got friends who are upset because they've detected that their children are smart and they're going, this one's going to want to go to university. Oh, help us.
Yeah, I've pulled both of mine out of school. They're working in a factory now on the East Strand.
Dad's joking, folks. Dan's joking. So now I know money's tight, and for every cent, I want people to just know that when they walk out of that theater, that was a great night. And I guess that's where I am. You know, when they, I think it's a cherry on top of the cake with they're going home and they're saying, I've thought about certain things that Mark said or thought about certain issues. That's fine. But more and more I'm finding, particularly when I'm performing in Joburg, by the time people walk into the venue, they've hit potholes the size of the hull in Kimberley. They are without water. They're without electricity. None of the traffic lights on William Nickel on the way to Monte Cassino worked. Nobody knew whether they should trust the guy with the green bib who's never driven a car a day in his life but is telling you now's a good time to continue driving. People are traumatized because some people are going to give these people tips and they're throwing money out of the window and is the right guy going to get it while speeding off? That's how they walk into the venue at Monty. So when I walk onto stage, before you haven't even said your first gag, you run, it's so great.
We're still alive.
Yes. We haven't crashed the car. Great to see you, Lottery. Bring me the head of John the Baptist. Make us laugh. And then your energy in Joburg is so different as the comedian, because I'm like, I wear my sickness. And you move from there. This is the interesting thing about being a comedian in South Africa. And then you open 3 nights after Joburg at Theatre on the Bay in Camps Bay. And you walk on with the same energy, forgetting that you're in Camps Bay. I wear my sickness.
Dead silence.
And there Dorothy is sitting next to her daughter Bianca. Okay. It's a bit loud. Like, why is he so frantic? Because I've just come from Joburg. So my mission is for the night, you know, with that energy in Joburg, for example, for 90 minutes, make them forget. And if you're going to make them, if you're going to talk about the pothole that's like the big hole in Kimberley, it had better be funny, because they've given you some cash just to get some relief for 90 minutes. The madness that is South Africa, well, that is the world right now. The world has gone a bit mad.
And that it's therapy, I think, for a lot of your audiences. But I also think it's therapy for the comedians. When you come off that stage and you look, I think, one of your proteges, that Trevor guy who did some stuff in America, he's a good example. Somebody said, okay, I've done TV, but I really want to go back to stage.
I really should have befriended him when I had the time, wouldn't you?
Well, you did say you had those two straight relationships, and he does look a little like you. But I'll let people draw their own conclusions, and he's very funny. But when you end one of those shows, that natural high of having an audience on their feet cheering because you've made their night, there can't be much, if anything, that matches that.
Dan, there isn't much of anything that matches that. And you never can get used to it, especially when it doesn't happen. You go, oh, I miss Friday night. But there's no money that can equate that kind of, you know, bring you that kind of joy and happiness. The thrill of people jumping up and screaming and applauding you. And applause in South Africa now is more than just, oh, you were funny. You know, I think people collectively buy into this thing of, you know, when they listen to you speak and what you have to say, we're all in this together. And your take on stuff and your, for me, it certainly is, well, I'm too old to apply to go and work in Sydney right now. So here we are, and we're going to make the best of it. And we are still optimistic that things can turn around for the next generation. So all of those aspects for me is felt in the sound of applause, or best case scenario, a standing ovation. There's a lot going on. So there really is no better feeling than that when you get to the end of the show and there's that kind of, yes, people have received what you want to say, but that demonstration, you know, of them being receptive in that way, it's pretty amazing.
And you've got a whole pile of that coming up now. Just a quick tick of the boxes. Where is this new show going to be? Where can we watch you?
It's all the details are on marklotching.com. It's the website you stay on day and night, because we can see who's viewing.
It's my home server.
It's awkward, but 3 a.m. really every morning.
So, I'm usually overseas. It's a different time zone.
Of course. So all the details are on marklotching.com. But if you want to hear them now, it's Joburg Monte Cassino in September. And then the show comes to Theatre on the Bay, end of September, beginning of October. That's
with
all
a
this
crashing
year.
Crashing halt.
And just before Joburg, we put 2 nights. We're at the Atterbury Theatre in Pretoria, a lovely theatre. Always love performing there. I obviously have to love this space because their rates are outrageous. They take the most money in the country to get into that venue. Every artist will tell you. But once you're there, the crew is so great. And they give you a platter before you start the show, which you don't get anywhere else, Peter Turin. So, and of course, as the show develops, once we discover, it's every comedian's nightmare to have this interview and announce the shows, because now we cross fingers and go, let it be brilliant. And once it takes off, we start booking other venues, the Eastern Cape, Durban, and so forth. So, so it's yeah. I hope that it's brilliant. Now, this is the first interview I've done about the show.
Ta-da.
So excuse me for sounding a little bit anxious, but I leave from here and I go to a little space where I continue writing. Yes, and please let it be amazing. So the show will grow in terms of getting to other venues as well. But best bet is go to marklarching.com for everything else in my life.
All right. Well, look, I believe there are already dozens of tickets have been sold, so it's looking very promising. And before that, you've got that writing to do because, of course, you now have to write me into the next edition of Auntie Merle.
I do have to because, you know, Auntie Merle has another sister that nobody's spoken about who lives in Auckland. And she's quite fair.
I can see this coming together. Beautiful.
Oh, you joke this now, Dan. I mean, if I say Dan Nicol plays Auntie Mel's sister that nobody's heard about in Auckland, I can guarantee you on that day alone, we'll sell about 700 tickets with people who hate musicals. People who hate musicals.
This will be when they're doing the interview in 10 years' time. So, Mark, what was the moment that ended your career? Well, my friend Dan Nicol. Oh dear. Mark, I am very lucky to call you a friend, but I'm also very much a fan, and I'm not sure there's anybody who isn't, because it's very hard not to enjoy your company, be it personally or on stage, and you've given us so much joy over so many years. And the fact that even though you are now, as you say, 66, there's still so much to come, and you inspire very young people like
some
myself.
Some people started watching late. 56!
But the fact that there's still not just so much energy, but so much genuine love for what you do is really, really inspiring. So keep it going. I'm going to be in the show. I'm going to keep as quiet as possible because I was getting very jealous when other people get laughed at. I know it's going to be wonderful. And maybe I will be Auntie Merle's sister on a stage coming to you somewhere sometime soon.
It is Merle Abrams and there's Danielle Abrams. Can't wait.
Mark Lartering. I love you. Thank you.
I love you, Dan Nicol.
You're listening to The Dan Nicol Show.